B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper and Murray, reunited again here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Chris off last week. Hi, Chris.
How are you, Jim?
Oh, excellent. You know, is this increasingly predictable? Sometimes boring Patriots season rolls along. At least it feels boring to me. This week, anything but Brady's future in question, thanks to Adam Schefter, before Monday night's game against the Jets. That feels like it happened 3 weeks ago. Mohamed Sanu in, Josh Gordon out, or at least put on IR. Michael Bennett traded to the Dallas Cowboys for the equivalent of pocket lint. Where do you want to start with any of this? The Brady thing, I get it. It's Tom Brady. You know, you just say Brady and people want to, you know, hear what you have to say about him. And I feel like it's been exhausted at this point. And I also, this got brought up yesterday because on Felger and Maz, they had spoke to a somewhat high-level Patriot source who threw out behind the scenes, you know, maybe this was like one of those wag the dog type situations, because you weren't here last week when the whole Netflix appearance on that that Paul Rudd show.
Yeah, Living With Yourself.
Living With Yourself really popped Friday night into Saturday.
When you started it?
I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll own that.
When you started that thing?
Just put out the vague tweet of the video with the emoji.
Yeah, definitely out of the Brady Club now.
Took off from there and then had to deal with people all up in my mentions like, you didn't put any context to this. You're taking it out of context. What was the show really about? Yeah, I did it that way for a reason, you idiots.
I thought there was context there.
Yeah, there was, but still, people are stupid babies. Since that, this person that Phil Grimes had spoke to said, hey, you know, obviously Tom Brady is very PR savvy. What's to say that, because I think he was genuinely pissed off about that thing and being asked about it, and the way that Dan Housley stuck the microphone in his face last Saturday and was like, what were you thinking? You know, like, I had never really heard that tone from Tom Brady with his answers. So, hey, what's to say that to get people off his back for that situation, you leaked Adam Schefter something about like, oh, well, you know, he might not be back. This could be it. The least likely scenario is that he returns to the Patriots. He could be on another team, and then poof. Yeah, because people have short memories now. You forget about everything like within a 24-hour news cycle. Everyone's forgotten that, and we start talking about Tom Brady playing somewhere else or likely retiring after 2019.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. Just going back to August and when he did the contract for this year, and again, you know, his side was the side that wanted it in there that he couldn't be franchised. So when I look at that, I think that, like you mentioned, the short memories, a lot of this stuff was stuff that was discussed back when he did the contract, and it sort of came up again. And I also don't see Brady as being someone that goes to Schefter. I think Brady's more of a Michael Silver, Peter King type of guy, or, you know, wouldn't he go to his boy who helped him do Tom versus Time? Schefter's more of a Belichick guy, and Schefter had an interview with Belichick where Belichick was all smiles before that Monday night game. So I don't know. I think Schefter's also close with Patriots ownership. So maybe there's an element of what you're saying that was executed differently, but I don't think it's coming from Brady. I'm sorry. I don't buy that one.
Okay. And for those that missed your appearance yesterday on Felger and Maz, you do agree with Adam Schefter, right?
I do.
Of the three scenarios, the least likely is that he would be back with the Patriots next year.
Yes, right now. I agree with
retirement,
that.
Retirement, another team, and then the least likely not with the Patriots.
Yeah, that's the way I would stack the three at this point.
Is it because he feels wronged with the contract? Is it, you know, 20 years is a long time in one place? Maybe he's sick of Bill. He's just sick of the whole situation. Maybe he wants to try something new. Is it all like a combination of that and that, you know, or is retirement really the most likely?
I think it's like an amalgam of a bunch of different things. I think any sort of 20-year relationship at some point can start to wear on you a little bit, especially when you're in a subordinate role. And he is a subordinate, has been, and has behaved like one most of his career. I think that when you look at, you know, the contract stuff, I think every year it's sort of this year-to-year prove-yourself thing, which maybe is not great for him. And if you are have played as long as he has played, like, what's left for you to do to prove? What's going to fuel, like, does winning eight championships, and I'm going to assume he's going to win this year, does winning eight championships in New England, I mean, that's amazing, but is that a bigger challenge than, you know, going to Tennessee and making them a playoff team or making them relevant? You know, sometimes you just might need a new challenge. And also, I think there's the family life factor. He's been really, really clear the last couple of years that in order for him to do this, there's a lot of people in his life that have to make sacrifices. And I think he's also been clear that his wife is at the top of the list. So there's all those things that I think go into it.
Yeah, the tone has definitely changed, you know, because I do believe that, you know, to help his brand, the TB12 thing and all that, he does want to play to 45. But I don't know, with his interview that he did earlier this week on EEI saying, now I'm on a day-to-day basis now, it's like, whoa.
Well,
okay,
the biggest thing there
really was
the borrow time. You know, this is like, he's never said anything. I mean, this is someone who's like peak performance, who's talked about if you train differently, your career shouldn't end the same way as other people. I mean, his whole brand is basically being the undead. And now it's like, oh, I'm on borrowed time.
Yeah, borrowed time with who? Is it the wife? Is it Giselle standing behind him, like tapping her foot, pointing at the watch, like, borrowed time, hurry up, let's go. That might be part of it.
I'll tell you this, Jim. My thing was, I always thought he'd play through age 43. He's 42 now. That was just my guess. That was not – I always thought the 45 thing – would be hard to do. And it's not so much from a physical standpoint, given the rules and the way they are today, as Steve Young pointed out, but mentally, it's a grind. Like, how long do you want to do this? And I feel like this year, for whatever reason, I just don't see the same level of enjoyment. And I don't think it's just the receivers. You know, this is a lot. It's a lot. And I always thought that he would sort of peter out mentally before he would physically.
Yeah, you mentioned this yesterday, too, and I guess I hadn't really paid attention to it too much. And I had asked you on the air, hey, does he still do the, you know, when they come out of the tunnel, run down to the end of the field, scream the let's go thing that's become part of his whole routine in recent years. And I haven't been in the stadium early enough to see that. People did tell me that, yes, he does still do that. But I'm with you. Like, overall, and I know people get mad, like, you're reading body language, you're reading too much into it. I don't know. Just compare it to prior years. He looked like the same guy on the field just in terms of, like, the enthusiasm, and I think it's a hard no. You know, it does feel like it's a slog. It feels like, more than anything else, from more often than not through these first 7 weeks, like, he's just been kind of a sidecar, and that probably irks the hell out of him. You know, it is more about the defense. That being said, if he was to call it a career, because he can obviously still play at an extremely high level,
yes,
I think he's on. I don't think he's like MVP candidate with the way he's played this year, but like, he's on that second tier. And then you see the touchdown that he threw to Dorsett in the Jets game. It's like, oh man, that was like right in the breadbasket.
Yeah.
If he were to call it a career, like, hey, it's his decision, I get it, but you know, he can obviously still play it like one of the best
totally.
In the league.
But what if just hypothetically, what if some of the frustration with this year is that he's already made his decision and he's going to retire, and he wanted to go out in a blaze of glory after last year was, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't great by his
not to the level. Yeah,
yeah, his lofty standards, it was fine. And this year is sort of more the same as last year. What if his plan was like, I want to go out in a blaze of glory. I want to go out, you know, playing the way that I was playing in 2017 when I was the league MVP, and that's not happening. I mean, wouldn't that be frustrating?
Yeah,
especially when you look at why it's not happening.
For sure. And that's why, like, so, you know, I think he is pissed that Antonio Brown is no longer here. We would have liked to seen that thing ride out. So he loses a big weapon there that would have helped pump up his numbers. Josh Gordon now out, Mohamed Sanu in. What'd you make of that deal? Is he a good fit for this offense?
I think he's a great fit. And I thought it was interesting. I know you guys talked about it on Felger and Maz that Sanu was the guy that Brady wanted above Emmanuel Sanders. I'm not sure I would agree with that, but I can see why Brady would feel that way, because Sanu is that sort of Danny Amendola, you know, to a lesser degree, Chris Hogan type of outlet in the offense that you have in addition to Edelman, a guy that can help you move the chains, and it's sort of death by a thousand paper cuts and that efficiency. That, at this stage of Brady's career, is more helpful to him than some deep ball threat. You know, I think a guy like Sanu, who's operated, I mean, you go and you look at Pro Football Focus, if you take out the special team snaps, which are in there, and just look at the offensive snaps, when he's lined up, you know, at wide receiver, it's like 79% of them have been in the slot. So when you look at that, I think that helps him And that helps the offense more than having somebody maybe that can stretch the field.
Yeah, he doesn't have the straight line speed that'll take the top off the defense.
No.
He was really never that guy that much, especially when he went to Atlanta. But he can make the tough catch in traffic like Danny Amendola, like you say. And he's someone that Brady can trust. So I think he'll be a good fit for this offense. Is there some sticker shock? Yeah, a second seems high. But
yes,
it does feel like it's a seller's market if you just compare this to – I mean, these are younger guys at different positions, but like what Jalen Ramsey went for, Laremy Tunsil, what he went for from the Dolphins to the Texans. So if you look at what guys are going for, seller's market. And for me, anyway, too, like, I don't know, what the hell do I care with a second-round pick with this team? It's about winning now, F the future. And when's the last time Belichick actually hit on a second-round draft pick? 5 years ago, Garoppolo, six, maybe Jamie Collins? Like, in recent years, it's Jawan Williams, who, okay, fine, we don't know really yet. But Duke Dawson, you blew that one. Cyrus Jones, a bum's bum. Jordan Richards, same thing there. He just gets cut again. So, like,
a rough list.
Yeah, right? So in recent years, a second-round draft pick? I don't know. It's like Bill doesn't know what the hell to do with it anyway, so screw it.
That's a great point you're making on the players, and I'm glad you did that because this is the point I make with the Celtics when the Celtics won't like trade one of their first-round picks for some like rental guy, and I'm like, okay, what if instead of a first-round pick I told you it was J.R. Giddens or Fab Melo or R.J. Hunter? Wouldn't you make that trade?
Yes.
So you're right about the sticker shock, but when you put it that way, when you're like, hey, we just traded Cyrus Jones for Mohamed Sanu, that's a great deal.
Yeah, right. And these are the players you're trying to get, right? Like a plug-and-play player, a guy that can play just about every down.
Yeah.
And if you can't hit it with the pick, well, then deal it away. So, I don't know. Like, again, sticker shock a little bit. But when you see what has gone there in recent years on this team in the second round, what the hell? What do I care?
And I know you miss, like, all those guys, particularly Cyrus Jones. He was a guy you really enjoyed having on your team.
Yeah, watching that Ravens-Seahawks game last Sunday in the 4 o'clock slot. It's like, I'm seeing too much Cyrus Jones here. When's the fumble going to happen on one of these returns? And unfortunately, it never happened.
One of your all-time favorite Patriots.
Oh, God. He sucked from the get-go. I want to get your thoughts on Michael Bennett. He has been traded to the Dallas Cowboys.
He's been freed.
Yeah, right, for pocket lint. I can't believe how this one blew up in their face, too. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And as Chris just mentioned, the Celtics and how they've always hung on to those picks and used them poorly. We will get to the Sports Hub Celtics show, the second one of the year, coming up at noon. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Michael Bennett era is over in New England. He's the guy they were obsessed with stopping in Super Bowl 49 when he was with the Seahawks. He joined the team this year. When he was suspended one game last week for conduct detrimental to the team, and there was this weird statement that was issued by him that clearly wasn't written by him, that suggested there was some sort of an altercation with his position coach, they didn't cut him on the spot because they didn't want him to show up with the Ravens or the Chiefs or the Texans or the Bills or any team they're worried about in the AFC. So they're either going to wait until after the trade deadline to cut him when he would have to pass through waivers, or they're going to trade him to an NFC team. And lo and behold, one day after he had some comments to the media that suggested he wasn't all that thrilled with what's going on in New England, he's traded to the Dallas Cowboys for a sixth-round pick or a seventh-round pick in 2021. They basically gave the guy away to get him out of the AFC, and now he's the Cowboys' problem, and the Cowboys will hope that they can push the buttons on him and somehow get the most out of him because they could use some help in that pass rush rotation in Dallas.
Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio on Michael Bennett being traded this week. Eventful week for the Patriots after that Jets game on Monday night. Big win there, the shutout. They got Sam Darnold seeing ghosts. They're 7-0, but after that, there's guys coming, there's going. Bennett, one of those who is out the door. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, a Sports Hub. So he is traded for a fifth-round pick, right?
I think it's a seventh that can become a
sixth. No, when they got him.
Oh, when they got him.
Yeah,
yes,
and now he is traded for a seventh that could be a sixth. It just, after his last game, was that the one against the Giants? Where
yeah, he played 11 snaps, most of them in the fourth quarter.
11 snaps, and you saw the snap count decrease by the week. It felt like once you got 11, I remember Greg Bedard did the post game with Beadle and I that night and was like, that's a number where you have to say, like, okay, something's about to happen here. Like, he's going to be traded. He's going to be out the door. There's something going on here behind the scenes. This isn't just about, like, scheme, fit, something like that. Like, it's just not working. And more than anything else, it just feels like this was one that – this is another one of those moves that Belichick is – so there was a discussion on with Felgren as in the last few weeks, Chris. I think it was while you were away. Like, what grade would you give Bill Belichick as a general manager? Now, as a coach, greatest of all time. Fine. Like, A+. Like, you can't argue that. But as a GM, like, I don't know. He's just as average as anybody else. And in more recent years, I think when it comes to trading for veterans or trying to find veterans in free agency, or even when he's overpaid guys that are here that ended up becoming, you know, big fat slobs like Alan Branch, like, he's had more misses than hits. And Michael Bennett's just another miss. Like, this is a guy that was one of their marquee moves this offseason. They trade for him with the Eagles. They give him a pay bump. I thought he was going to be a great stopgap. You know, I thought losing Trey Flowers sucked, but it's like, okay, Michael Bennett's still playing at a very high level. He was at times virtually unblockable in Super Bowl 49 when he was with the Seahawks. He had a great year with the Eagles last year as that team ended up getting into the playoffs. So he would be the stopgap for Trey Flowers for at least one season. Then you barely noticed him in preseason. You barely noticed him early, and now he's gone for a seventh that could be a sixth-round pick. And I don't know, like, part of it, most of it really feels like it's an attitude thing and how the fit would be here. Well, that's just, you didn't do your due diligence there with Michael Bennett and how he would be a fit. Like, you just, I'm Bill Belichick, I can make it work. Well, you didn't. And it's another one along the lines of Coney Ealy, again, Branch, Mike Gillisley, Cassius Marsh for two draft picks, and I get he sucks, but you know, you're just throwing away draft picks willy-nilly for guys that really aren't good fits, and it feels like you just didn't do your homework on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, actually, when you put it in that sort of perspective, you know, even a guy who was like a decent blocker here, like Dwayne Allen, wasn't quite the player that you
for
thought
third
he
rounder.
Was going to be. And you look at that, and then Brandon Cooks, I like that deal. I wish they had given him a little more time here. Obviously, you would have had to pay him, so that was a big part of it, but you gave up a one for him. When you look at it, I'm on Michael Bennett's side on this one for a lot of the reasons that you enumerated. You knew what this guy was as a player and what his strengths were. And I think that's one of Bill's great strengths, is that he takes what a player does well and is able to maximize that and minimize the weaknesses. But I felt like something got lost in translation here, and they were not using him in a manner where he could succeed. Now, look, do they need him? No. I mean, you look at their defense, it's unbelievable. They've given up 27 points, I'm laughing saying it, in seven games. They don't need this guy, and that changed. But the reality is, to sit there and have, you know, Brett Bielema lecturing him on the virtues of two-gapping, and this is a guy who's a three-time Pro Bowler and has a Super Bowl ring in Seattle, that's a waste of time. And I think what they might have misjudged is, and I've seen this in the past before, and it happened a little bit with Adalis Thomas, when you have guys in the league who know that you can have success, probably not to the degree of the Patriots, obviously, that type of sustained success, but that you can win other ways, that you don't have to be a Patriots automaton to win, that's where they've had some issues in the past, where there's a guy that has a Super Bowl ring from somewhere else, doesn't like what's happening, doesn't like being told that the sky is purple when he looks up and sees that it's blue. And then that guy's like, I can't swallow this. And I think that was part of it, too. And if I'm Bennett, again, no, just, you know, as Rodney Harrison used to say to us, no disrespect, and then completely disrespect us. No disrespect to Brett Bielema, but he has the job because he's a certified FOB. He's a friend of Bill. This is not like we went out to find the absolute best defensive line coach. This is like, this guy last year was basically an assistant to the head coach or whatever his title was. He's been boys with Bill for a little while based on Arkansas and Wisconsin. That's why he has the job, and he's going to lecture Michael Bennett on defensive line play in the NFL. No.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And the people that wanted to, you know, defend this and say, hey, well, he had to go, and Bielema is just an extension of Bill. He's one of the coaches. There's a hierarchy. Fine, but again, look at Brett Bielema and what his track record is and what his resume is. Like, please, if I
in
was
the
Michael,
NFL, I mean, he's a great college resume.
If it's in college, fine. But here, like, if I'm Michael Bennett with a ring and I know, you know, what my abilities are, I'd be like, dude, screw. Like, I'm not listening to
you.
Yeah,
like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. It'd be the equivalent if, you know, God forbid this happens, but like our assistant program director, Rick Radzik, who I love and I think we all respect here, say he left, and then in comes some 28-year-old kid from some mid-market hellhole, and he starts, you know, telling us what for. I'd be like, I'm not listening to you. What, because, oh, screw, because of your stripes? Like, what have you accomplished?
But see, then you would, because when push comes to shove, you're like, I want this job.
Eh.
Whereas Michael Bennett was like, I'll find another job.
Yeah, no, I'd find another job. I'd be fine. Start a podcast. I go wait tables at this point. What the hell do I care? So you say they don't need him.
Yeah.
I don't know. So fine. Yeah. So far they haven't. and Adam Butler has done a hell of a job. He's a bigger dude. He's better against the run, and maybe that was, in terms of schematically, it's one of the reasons they looked at Bennett and said this wasn't going to work because he's freelances too much, just a pure pass rusher. But what about, Chris, when they're going to end up facing more mobile quarterbacks? You got Lamar Jackson coming up in a couple of weeks, Deshaun Watson, obviously Patrick Mahomes, and these are quarterbacks you could likely see again in the playoffs. So I don't know. I tend to believe you would have been better served hanging on to this guy, trying to make it work, and then – you know, using him in just, again, pure pass rush situations, especially when you're going to face more mobile quarterbacks. Well, I feel like you could end up missing him.
I don't know. I mean, schematically, he just is not a fit, Jim. I mean, the way that they're playing, you know, they're more of a 3-4 type of front. And what they like and what they're succeeding with is you look out there and it's the three linebackers. So it's Hightower, it's Collins, it's Van Noy. And then a lot of times it's either Winovich or Simon, and one or two down linemen, like a Butler or a Guy or Shelton, and then five or six DBs, give or take, you know, mesh up that that personnel. They like the idea that when you look at that, it's like who's rushing and who's not. If Michael Bennett's on the field, he's not dropping back into coverage. You know that, right? So if you have, let's say it's Winovich, the three linebackers, one down lineman, right, and six DBs, so three safeties and three corners. Again, who's rushing and who's not? It's like all of a sudden, okay, Devin McCourty's coming now, but like John Simon dropped out. It's the whole thing that had Darnold seeing ghosts from a schematic standpoint is the ability to put guys out there that can do multiple things. That's not really Michael Bennett. He's going to get upfield and rush the passer. That's his thing.
Mm. Going back to Monday night's game quickly, there's really not much worth talking about because it was 17-0 after a quarter. It's like, oh, God, there's so much time left here. But it does – I mean, the defense is ridiculous. I do think it's legit. I don't think it's just because they're playing bad opponents. I expected that to actually be a game, Chris. I don't know how you felt
I did going too. Into it. Yep, got chastised on the old social media for expecting a team to actually give the Patriots a game.
Well, and I based that on the performance that Darnold had against Dallas. And I think Dallas is good, not great. I mean, like you, I ended up kind of switching to say, like, oh, this team's for real after 3 weeks. So they're going to be the best team in the NFC. They'll be representing the Super Bowl. Eh, they look, got 9-7 written all over them.
But Dallas is going to Super Bowl.
Be that as it may, Chris. The defense, I mean, it is 100% legit. And I'm just, the thing that continues to impress me is just how they cycle 3 to 5 guys out almost every other play. Like, their depth, that, I think, is what is their biggest attribute is. Like, that's the best thing going forward is like, okay, so this is maybe where I'm going to be proven wrong, even though I would like Bennett in those pure pass rush situations against more of a mobile quarterback. It really won't matter because you got Winovich that you can put in on third down. Or you have John Simon you can put in these certain situations. Like, it always seems like everyone's fresh. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's a great point. Yeah, they have a lot of depth and they have a lot of versatile pieces, and that's what Bill likes. And he said from the jump, I think it was to Willie McGinnis, during the preseason, talking about liking this defense and saying that they were intelligent, you know, that he had smart guys and they can do a bunch of different things. And you see that out there, and it makes a difference. And again, that's one of the reasons Bennett wasn't a fit, not because he's not smart, but just because there's these smart, versatile pieces. Like, did anybody think that John Simon was going to get more snaps than Michael Bennett?
No.
But never. Simon is better against the run than Bennett, right? And there's a versatility factor there of, again, is this guy rushing or is he like, what is happening here? And I have to figure this out as a quarterback. I have to figure this out as an offensive line. And Bill loves that. He loves that idea of the other team having to decipher his defense. He sort of hates, to a degree, being predictable. There's some levels of predictability he's willing to accept, like Stephon Gilmore is going to cover the other team's best receiver. That's very predictable, but he's going to dominate. So it's like he'll accept that. But otherwise, just having, even when they won in 2014, I don't think he loved that defense. Like, he respected it, but it was like, oh, crap. All we can do is play man-to-man. Do you remember, like, Kyle Orton coming out? You know, he's with Buffalo towards the end there, and Harbaugh came out, too, and they're like, well, the Patriots are a man-to-man team. And that was, like, the only time I can remember up until that point where somebody was just basically like, well, we know exactly what the Patriots are going to do.
Yeah.
And then the next year, they tried to change it up a little bit. So I just think the whole idea with Bill that he has this front that's multiple and unpredictable, he's like a kid in a candy store.
All right. Well, we've touched on Bennett. We've touched on Brady. We do have to get to Josh Gordon because I do feel like they did him a little dirty this week. I want to get
really?
To that. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. The whole thing, the way it was handled, it just feels like something's afoot there. So I want to get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Sean Silver, Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Sports Hub headlines. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You guys were going to go away from Eric Tomlinson. Josh Gordon was on the field. And then later that day, Josh ended up on IR. Eric came back. What changed that day just to change that?
Yeah, well, there are a number of things going on. In the end, we made the transactions that fell rest of it.
Expressed surprise that he was put on IR. Is that a conversation you have with him before it happens, or is that a conversation that goes through the agent and then to Josh?
We're just following the rules.
Do you intend to part ways with Josh once he gets healthy?
That's a conversation for later. He's not healthy right now, so.
Am I an a-hole for reading too much into that last thing that Bill Belichick said there, talking about Josh Gordon, this press conference yesterday? Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So he just says about Josh Gordon, he's not healthy right now. That's kind of open-ended to me. Does he mean physically or mentally? Because I feel like the way that this whole thing worked out this week with Josh Gordon, who's been cut, or is about to be cut, he's put on IR. I felt like they did him a little bit dirty, Chris, because he works out Wednesday in a non-padded walkthrough. Then he's listed as a did not participate on the injury report, the first one of the week. Then there's word that they're going to cut the tight end Eric Tomlinson, and then they're not going to cut him because you end up putting Gordon on injured reserve, and it feels like, based on the timing of everything that afternoon, Josh Gordon finds out that he's put on injured reserve via the NFL official Instagram post that says he's been put on IR, and he has a little comment there that has the little skeptic emoji with the monocle on it and just says, interesting, like, news to me. It just feels like this whole thing was, at the very least, if they didn't do him dirty, there was a real lack of communication there. And I get it. It's a cold business. It's the NFL. Guys come and go, and it's just the nature of the beast. But in Gordon's case, because I think you're dealing with a delicate situation, to be fair, considering his past and issues with substance abuse, it just feels like this one felt premature. And the other thing I don't like about it is now, from some of the people that cover the team, it's like, oh, well, they weren't really relying on him in the first place. They weren't. How about go back to the Pittsburgh game? How much were they not relying on him in that game? How about even in Miami, even though he didn't have that great of a game and they had Antonio Brown, but he was being targeted in that game.
So that's five targets in that
that's
game.
That's completely disingenuous. That's false. It's a false narrative. They weren't relying on Josh Gordon. Yeah, they were. They were at least early in the season.
Yeah, particularly after Antonio Brown was out of here. I mean, if they weren't relying on the guy, then why was Tom Brady doing a throwing session with him?
Right.
I mean, you know, those are hard to get. Ask Gunnar Olszewski if you know how easy it is to get a private throwing session with Brady. So, you know, I don't agree with that part. The guy started every game that he has played in as a Patriot. So they were relying on him to a degree. And there are those of us who have said repeatedly, we root for him. I root for him. But his history is that he's not reliable. I mean, he has not played all 16 games since his rookie year of 2012. For a variety of reasons, most of them suspensions. Now, this is an injury situation, obviously, this year. So it is interesting. I mean, you know, you feel good about them going out and getting Sanu, obviously, but I'll be honest, when they made that move, I'm thinking, great, Edelman, Gordon, Sanu. I'm like, we're in business.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Gordon's on IR. So there probably is more to the story, but I think at the end of the day, when you look at this guy, they relied on an unreliable guy, and it didn't work out for them, and that's not surprising. And it's a situation they put themselves in for the last 2 years of trying to do these sort of last minute wide receiver remediation, whether it's trading for Josh Gordon after Cleveland became exasperated with him and said, we can't rely on this guy. And they did that last year, and it worked pretty well until he got suspended again the last couple of games of the year. It's Antonio Brown, you know, this year, who'd shot his way out of two teams in 6 months. And you bring him in and hand him a boatload of money, and then it blows up in your face. And even to a lesser degree, I love the move. But, you know, I've heard people say they had to give up a second-round pick for Sanu because the Patriots get penalized because they win all the time and their picks are at the end of the round. Well, Albert Breer said the last two teams left for Sanu were the 49ers and the Patriots. The 49ers don't have a second-round pick, and they're the only other undefeated team in the NFL. You had to give up a second-round pick because you're dealing from a position of urgency and weakness because you're desperate and you need that guy. So I just think overall sort of the mishandling of this position and the idea that in season they're always trying to find like a fix.
Well, it's a shell game for the last 3 years at that position. They've completely botched that. I'm with you on that. There is a little bit more here on the situation from Josh Gordon, from Tom Curran and Phil Perry from their Quick Slants podcast.
There's always going to be the specter of could he be less dependable? And when the Patriots found out in August, and it seemed really clear to me, Phil, that he was plunked down in their laps and said, here's your player back, they needed him. But I don't know if they were like, oh, thank God, everything's going to be great. I think it was a very measured response to his reentry into the organization, because there's always again, like the specter of, can we count on him all the way through?
Totally.
Okay, thank
and this
you.
Is
and
why
Sanu comes in dependable, and then boom, on the heels of that, next day it's bye-bye Josh.
And
it just seems weird to me that the Patriots were ready and poised to pull the rug out from under Josh Gordon, if indeed they were. You know what I'm saying? All they needed was a guy to come in that made him expendable, is what it feels like. I don't know if that's what
feel,
it is.
It, feel
it feels like we just got to get somebody in here that we can count on more than Josh, because he's not – to me, he is much closer to average than elite, and I had said that prior to him being injured.
Tom, it does feel that way, just given the timing of the Sanu signing and the Gordon placement on IR. But again, the team didn't place Gordon on IR when they brought Sanu in. The team released Eric Tomlinson. So not only maybe had something been building there, and I've been given indications that he was – not as dependable as they wanted him to be over the course of the season at different points. But something might have happened yesterday that would have been the final stake and said, okay, you know what? We're pretty deep at receiver right now. We feel better about this right now. And we can move on without Josh Gordon and feel just fine about our receiver situation.
So that's the most interesting part of that there at the end, yeah, with Phil saying he had heard that maybe he wasn't as dependable,
yeah,
as they had wanted him to be. And shame, you know, like, he was speaking so clear-headed, in his whole demeanor in postgame from week one on, Chris, was so different than last year, that I thought, well, they're actually going to get a full season out of this kid, you know, barring injury. And he did get banged up, obviously, in that Giants game, and had, you know, screwed up his finger earlier in the year too. Like, he was dealing with myriad injuries physically. But I don't know, do you think now, after hearing that, and Phil's really not that much of a flamethrower, I don't think he's going to, like, sit
Phil's
here and,
not, no,
you know,
no,
throw
no.
out speculation, do you think it was... Are you going to be surprised if we end up hearing it is something else, that, you know, maybe his
no.
demons caught up with him again?
No, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's something out there about, you know, a situation where they felt like he wasn't reliable, or it was difficult to get in contact with him or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised. But at the same time, I look at it and I'm like, you knew who you were getting into business with. Like, what did you expect? And I don't mean that in a callous way, because I root for Josh Gordon. I hope he ends up on another team and he's able to, you know, continue his career. Hopefully this is not a situation where he's facing any sort of NFL discipline. It's just the Patriots getting fed up. But again, when you go into business, like, what do you expect? Like, that's my point on this. Yeah. And Antonio Brown, too. It's like, do you expect these guys to change just because they're in your building and you really like football and you build a football environment? Like, there's an element of hubris to that. Like, you knew what you were getting into business with when you got into business with Josh Gordon. So it's like, okay, Josh Gordon was, you know, not as reliable as you had hoped. Really? Newsflash. Like, I just kind of don't understand that one, to be honest. And I think you sort of, you know, you get what you pay for.
What do you think of the Patriots' moves this week? Mohamed Sanu in, Josh Gordon out. Michael Bennett traded to the Cowboys for Pocket Lint. 617-779-0985. Get to your calls. And, Chris, I want to get your thoughts on the game tomorrow. Cleveland coming in here. Maybe the most hyped team in the NFL since the 2011 Eagles. And they've been anything but. They haven't lived up to that hype. So your thoughts on Cleveland coming up as well here. And Gasper Murray, our long commercial-free segment, coming up next.
This is Gasper and Murray. You will listen. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
When you guys play a primetime game, particularly, there's always a lot, even more media discussion around that game. And just around this last one, there was some media discussion about your future and sort of what that's going to lead to. How are you approaching that?
My contract situation hasn't changed in many months, so I don't know why it gets brought up now. I don't know. I think it's just hype, media, and, you know, everyone's trying to make money, and, you know, that's what it's about. So I don't get into it. I mean, honestly, my situation hasn't changed, so I'm just focused on what I'm always focused on, which is this week trying to be a great quarterback for this team. And as I said the other day, you know, things happened at the right times, but this isn't, you know, the right time.
Yeah, get the blame stream media, Tom Brady. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. I mean, I don't know. I think there could be something, that whole wag the dog thing. Like, he, you know, he's pissed about the Netflix show that he appears in. And
that you started.
You're trying to take a shot at Robert Kraft, and he's mad about that. The camera's getting stuck in his face. The microphone's being stuck in his face last Saturday. Dan Housley with the smarmy question. What were you thinking? And from there, all of a sudden, in a matter of like 48 hours, we're talking about Tom Brady's future. Is this going to be his last year? Going to retire? Going to go to another team? Divert. It's like the old Alex Jones false flag operation. That's all. It's the blame stream media. Just give him some red meat. There's fluoride in the water. It's turning the fish gay. You know, it's divert. It's a little diversion tactic. Tom Brady's very PR savvy. I wouldn't put it past him. He'd be very smart if he did that. Your thoughts on some of the Patriots' moves this week? 617-779-0985. We'll lead it off with Ed and Whitman. You're first up here on Gaspar Murray this morning. Hey, Ed.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I hate doing this question, the Patriots, because you usually always look like an idiot at the end. But my big worry is depth, because by my count, and this is both sides of the ball, even though the defense looks great, injuries can happen. We have let go or traded away or whatever. We have, from the beginning of the season, just this season I'm talking about, now that is gone is Demaryius Thomas, Antonio Brown, and now Josh Gordon, and Michael Bennett. And what we've gained back, I see, is only Sanu and a very awesome sixth or seventh round pick in 2000, whatever. So yeah. I worry about depth in those positions. I know they look great now from a defensive side, not an offensive side. And as I mentioned, most of those are offensive aside Bennett. So I just get worried that they're thinking they're fine right now and not looking ahead to this season, not beyond this season, because I think when you got Brady, you just look at the season that's in front of you. And I just think they're hurting themselves when it comes to depth.
Thanks for the call, Ed. So they still got a few days to make a trade. Trade deadline's Tuesday afternoon, correct? Tuesday
yes.
Four.
It's the 29th.
So they also get some money on a cap with trading Michael Bennett. So I don't know. Do you think that there's at least maybe another move here? Because there's certain areas in terms of lack of depth. I'm with Ed, like especially tight end. I'd like to see them maybe add another. Just in terms of depth, I think they're going to get Isaiah Wynn back, have him plug in at left tackle, but maybe even a little bit more depth in the offensive line. Do you think something else could happen between now and Tuesday afternoon?
I mean, it could, but I'm not sure it's going to be some. It might be like a, you know, best case scenario. It's like a Kyle Van Noy move. You're like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that guy.
Expect that name.
He has some talent. Maybe he'll be better here than he was in another place. And then it's, you know, Bill's normally good for a steal or two at the deadline. I just don't know if he has the cap space to make it happen. Like, I'll be honest, I think they're done. And if they're done, I'm okay with it. I think this is enough. I do. I think they have enough to win it all.
The other thing, too, so Jakobi Meyers, I think, has popped in these last couple of games. I think it's 9 catches on 9 targets, not including the PIs, you know, that he's drawn the last few weeks.
Yeah.
I'm convinced, Chris, that at some point in the last couple of weeks, either McDaniels or Belichick or someone sat Brady down, they looked at the film and said, see, he's open. Stop staring at James White. Staring down Julian Edelman. Look at 16. He's actually open here. He's looked pretty good. Will you throw the damn ball to him? Because it feels like now he's looking his way the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think he has made some progress the last couple of weeks. There's no question about it. And I think he's sort of further along than a lot of young rookie receivers. But again, I don't want to do too much with him just because I've seen this before. And sometimes it's just by necessity. In other words, do you think he's further along than Kembrell Tompkins was in 2013? I would say no.
No, really?
No. Or even like Dobson. Dobson's first year. I mean, he had more yards his rookie year than Deion Branch.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I couldn't stand him from the rip.
Saying he's playing well, but it's relative is my point.
Okay. All right, let's go to Dan and Braintree on Josh Gordon. Hey, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Just have a quick question for you guys. With Josh Gordon going on IR, do we have to bring him back using one of those designated tags?
No.
To release him?
No, they don't have to do that. No. I mean,
okay, my concern was with if you bring Gordon back on one of those tags, then you're restricting yourself from bringing Wynn or Devlin back.
No, my understanding is that won't be an issue. And Mike Reese had this too. It's like the designation of IR that they put him on is like a slightly different designation, and it's one where like once Gordon is declared, you know, healthy, they basically have to waive him.
All right, so give me your quick thoughts on Cleveland coming in here tomorrow. This game is a whole hell of a lot less sexy than it was into the season. This Browns team on paper, you know, they're stacked. I love some of these. I was a Baker Mayfield guy. I know you weren't from the get-go, but
no, he can play. I got to give it to him.
But
he's not great this year.
I don't know. Like I've seen too much of him, too many commercials. Fine, like I get it, get that money. But like, I don't know. He's been overhyped. The whole team's been overhyped. They're really one of my most They're one of the things I hate most sometimes in sports, these teams that are already anointed as like the best team ever, and then they're anything but. And you can realize that within the first few weeks or first few games that you see them play. 2011 Red Sox, 2011 Philadelphia Eagles, last year's Celtics team. Like, they're paper champions. And the Browns this year, they're the same damn thing. And their head coach is a complete moron. So, okay, they're coming off the bye. They have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball, but I still expect this to be like a blowout tomorrow. I don't know how you can't.
Well, I mean, you look at it first. Baker Mayfield leads the league in interceptions. He's going up 11. Against a Patriots team that has 18, double any other team. I have to be honest, you know, this is I want to taste your tears game for me. Not a big Baker Mayfield guy. Probably one of the most annoying people for me in sports. I can't explain it. It's not his fault. It's probably more a me issue than a Baker Mayfield issue, sort of. But, you know, but I mean, this is one where I just want the Patriots to, I want this to be like 56 to nothing. I want him to be seeing ghosts. I want him to throw five picks. I'm really looking forward to this game.
And it's going to be a monsoon tomorrow, too. So that's great. I'm super, super pumped for that. I can't wait.
Be a nice drive down there for you.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, and you too, my friend.
Yeah
it's going to be awesome. All right. With that, we will pause the Patriots conversation. We'll get back to that in about an hour. Also want to touch on what happened with the Red Sox yesterday. They found the replacement for Dave Dombrowski, a new nerd in the neighborhood. We'll get to that as Chaim Bloom has been named the chief officer?
Chief baseball officer.
Yeah, just making up titles.
Yeah.
You can make an arrest if you'd like. You're an officer now.
I think you're chief radio officer on this show.
All right, we'll get to that right after the Sports Hub headlines. We're going to kick off the Sports Hub Celtics show. The second one of the year is the Celtics had their home opener last night, get a win over the Toronto Raptors. We'll touch on that and the green right after this here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.